ebb and flow of energies all around. The lights were auras of living things, some bright, some filled with energy. The brightest of all came from the being who stood beside him. "Is this how you see the world?" Vandel asked. "It is one way. Your mind becomes accustomed to it eventually. It maps its new way of seeing onto its old way of understanding reality. There will come a time when you will be able to perceive the world as once you did. It is a much narrower way of seeing, but our minds crave familiarity. You are saying you can shift from seeing the world like this to seeing it as if you had eyes?" "Indeed, and many gradations between." He tried to imagine Illidan as he had previously seen him, and slowly a very rough image of the betrayer stood before him, like a child's illustration drawn in mud. Its mud mouth moved as Illidan spoke. "In a way, it is like working magic. You get a feel for the flows of power. You get a sense of the souls of the living and the unliving." They walked toward a doorway. Vandel sensed its lack of density in the air and the solid matter around it. He was not sure how. He also sensed there were living things beyond it. There was power in them, too. They were waiting for something. Illidan pushed him forward. He collided with something at about waist height. It felt like the edge of a table. "Lie down on it."
"Why?" Vandel asked.
"You are about to receive your first tattoos." Vandel fumbled at the table with his hands, feeling the rough texture of the wood. It came to him then how much he had taken his sense of touch for granted, and how inaccurate it used to be. Now he could feel every grain of the wood, every knot, every splinter. He felt areas that were slightly rougher, as if the carpenter had been sloppy with his planing. It seemed like his various senses were now many times magnified. He lay down on the board. Leather straps snapped into place around him. Momentary panic filled him as he was restrained. It increased as power blossomed in one of the nearby figures. "You will learn to do these for yourself one day, but for now, you must accept them from others." "Be still," said Illidan. "This will hurt." The Inca leaned forward, and something so hot it was cold, or perhaps so cold it was hot, touched Vandel's flesh. He fought down the urge to scream. When the needle withdrew, he felt as if a dagger were being pulled from a wound and twisted. "No, no, no," the voice in his head gibbered in panic. The fear communicated itself to him. This was a trap. Evil magic was being worked here. The needle stabbed in once more. Pain blasted his body worse than anything he had felt since he had pulled out his own eyes. He thrashed around, trying to free himself. The restraining bands drew tight. Hard hands pushed down on him. The needle stabbed again and again, and every touch of its point sent blazing agony searing through him. With every stitch, strength leached out of him. The voice in his head grew weaker and weaker. He was dying. This magic was going to kill him. He snarled threats and whimpered pleas, but the pain went on and on and on until he could struggle no more and could only lie there while the Inca went about his work. Eventually the straps were undone. He could barely rise from the table. His anger and his fear had subsided. For the first time in days, he truly felt like himself. He could barely see the glow of auras around him. His enhanced senses had returned to normal levels. It was as if he had been drugged, and the potency had worn off. "I am glad that is over," Vandel said. "The worst is just beginning," Illidan replied. The cell walls closed in all around Vandel. Down below in the courtyards he could hear fighting and practicing. Were they like him, he wondered, a new intake of fools who had been seduced by Illidan's promises of power? It was a relief to be away from the sick house, to have his own chamber. He had been brought here immediately after gaining his first tattoos. It had taken him the whole day to recover from that. It was pleasant not to be surrounded by the auras of living things. The quiet was relaxing. He lay on his bed and touched his empty sockets. His eyes were gone forever.
In the absence of living things, it was easy to convince himself that he had hallucinated the whole experience of seeing auras. Perhaps it was a dream. The feel of rough sheets beneath his fingers told him that it was not. He was blind. He had blinded himself so he wouldn't see the terrible truth that the whole universe was doomed like his wife and child had been. There was nothing he or anyone else could do to stop the burning legion. Anyone who thought otherwise was as deluded as the betrayer. Such delusions were easy to have, sitting in a fortress like the Black Temple, surrounded by troops. The truth was that no one was safe. No place was safe. When the Burning Legion exerted its strength, the Black Temple would fall like a child's sandcastle kicked by a giant. All those fighters practicing arms outside would die when the Dreadlords came to claim the Legion's possession. Great Sargeras, the Titan who would topple the universe, would ultimately triumph. He had been the first to see the truth. Vandel stopped. Where had that come from? He had seen the fallen Titan in his vision. That must be it. Some part of Illidan's original vision had been transferred to him during the ritual. He knew that. But sometimes it felt as if Vandel wasn't in control of his thoughts. The tattoos bound the demon within him. It could not escape now. He traced the ink with his fingers, feeling the lines of power that scarred his body. His hand touched something else, something cold and hard. At first he thought it was a piece of metal, but then he realized that it was set in his skin. He fumbled at his face and found it was there, too. He paused, chilled by the realization that his flesh had been transformed. He felt one hand with the other, and it slowly dawned on him what had happened. Every place on his skin that had been touched by demon blood had been altered. He had acquired scales of some sort. This might just be the start of the process. He was certain that while he lay in the hospital, his skin had been normal. Perhaps this was only the first stage of the transformation. Perhaps he was turning into a demon. It seemed entirely possible. After all, he had no idea what had really been done to him. Illidan might well be lying. He certainly would if it suited his purposes. The change had begun after the demon had been chained by the mystical tattoos. It must have. He had not been changed when he got up this morning. He was certain of that. Perhaps, since the demon was unable to affect his mind, it was starting to affect his body. He rubbed his fingers against his palms. He felt the fingertips of his left hand with those of his right. The nails were long and sharp and dense, like the claws of a hunting cat. His gums hurt, and he fumbled at his mouth. Yes. His canines jutted out, large and sharp. He had acquired fangs. Black depression settled on him. He had sought the power to fight demons. Instead, he was being transformed into one. He was turning into the thing he hated. How long would it be before he was out there, killing other elves' children? He had felt the unnatural rage the demon had given him. He understood its strength. Who was he to try to contain that? Perhaps the best thing he could do was to kill himself before that happened. He sat up and reached out to the small table beside his bed. His rune-woven knife lay there, along with the charm he had made for Karael. He picked that up and thought about his dead son. How would Karael feel if he saw his father now? He would see only a monster, a creature on its way to becoming the thing that had murdered him. He told himself he was not thinking clearly, that something was affecting his mind. Perhaps it was the after-effects from the tattoo sorcery. No, you are seeing clearly for the first time in a long while. You are seeing yourself as you are. A hollow thing that has allowed itself to be changed into that which it hates, in search of a vengeance impossible to get. Illidan is mad. You are mad. The truth of that thought was incontestable. He was insane and had been for a very long time. He had always suspected it, and now all his suspicions were confirmed. Hatred filled him, turned this time on himself. He took the knife, tested its blade on his thumb. It was still magically sharp. He took the point and inserted it under the edge of one of the scales. He pulled it free. It hurt, but the pain lent him energy. If he could cut out all the scales, he could stop the transformation like a surgeon cutting out a patch of gangrene. The thought drove him to cut again and again until he was covered in his own blood and patches of his skin lay on the floor. He felt weak and dizzy. It occurred to him that he was losing blood and that he might die here in this cell. Something in his head laughed at that, and it came to him that the demon was not as trapped as he had believed, and certainly not as weak. It had just turned to a new form of attack, twisting his thoughts, toying with his emotions. It had tapped into all of his dark thoughts and self-hatred. It had access to all of his feelings and all of his shame. In a way, it was him. He pulled himself upright, and the demon went silent as if it had realized its mistake. He reeled toward the door. Blood stuck to his bare feet and made them sticky. He prayed that the cell door was not locked as he threw his strength against it. The door opened, and he fumbled his way out into the corridor, staggering from side to side so that he grazed the walls. He heard someone shout, "Another one! Get a karma!" Then he passed out. Vandel woke to the awareness of power all around him. It was soothing. The areas he had cut felt numb. They tingled, but the sensation was almost pleasant. Someone stood over him. He smelled like a broken. His aura blazed with magic. "You are a karma." Vandel's voice was weak and his throat felt parched.
"Yes, you are Vandel."
It was not a question.
"You clearly impressed Lord Illidan. He asked me to look after you personally."
"You are a healer?"
"I am. I do what I can to help the sick and the wounded."
"Which am I?"
"A bit of both, I would say, and something else as well. There is a taint in you that I mislike."
"Whatever it is, I thank you for your help."
"You are welcome, and you are also lucky the guards found you in time. You are the fifth of the new recruits to have attempted suicide in the past 2 days. You are the only one who has lived."
"I did not attempt suicide."
"What else would you call it? You hacked at your own flesh until you almost bled to death. You would have if you had hit an artery. What has been done to you?"
There was a note below the natural curiosity in Akama's voice that made Vandel wary.
"You do not know?" "I know only that Lord Illidan takes many of your people into that courtyard, and only a few come out, and those altered almost beyond recognition. If he is trying to create an army, he has chosen a funny way of doing so. Killing recruits rarely leads to a large force."
"If you do not know what is going on, it would perhaps be better not to ask. Lord Illidan has his reasons, and if he wants you to know them, he will share them with you." Akama made a tut-tutting sound.
"As you say, there is a good deal that goes on here in the temple that it is best not to be curious about."
As if to echo this, a mighty bellow sounded from deep below ground. The stones seemed to vibrate in time to the roaring.
"Another monster bound in the temple's defense," said Akama.
Vandel ignored the broken. A jolt of memory passed through him. 4 others had killed themselves. He recalled Illidan's words. It was possible that fewer than 1 in 5 of the recruits was going to survive the transformation. Vandel had thought the betrayer had been talking only about the ritual, but it occurred to him now that he had also meant its aftermath. He felt a sudden certainty that things were just beginning, and that the worst still lay ahead. Chapter 12. 4 months before the fall. Illidan strode into the council chamber. Akama followed at his heels, like a faithful dog. The broken seemed to be doing everything possible to look like a loyal servant. Perhaps he suspected that Veras Darkshadow's agents were watching him, and had been ever since his mysterious disappearances from the Black Temple had become numerous enough to attract Veras's attention. It was possible that Darkshadow simply wanted to discredit a rival, but his claims had aroused Illidan's curiosity. All eyes turned to look at him. There was fear in every gaze, The Burning Legion had struck hard. Prince Kael'thas had been missing for weeks, ever since he had set out in command of an expeditionary force to the Netherstorm. Everyone present knew that the war was not going well, and they expected to feel Illidan's wrath because of it. It did not matter. All was going according to plan, as long as his demon hunters were coming along. Illidan stalked over to the great map table. Massive gems carved to represent demonic transporters marred a dozen locations. They glittered like plague boils on the face of the world. They dotted Nagrand and Hellfire Peninsula, the Netherstorm and the Blade's Edge Mountains. It seemed that almost every province of Outland held at least one, sometimes more. "Each of these marks a new forge camp, Lord Illidan," said Gathios, the Shatterer, a little too quickly. He had risen from his carved throne as soon as Illidan entered, and he stood there as if called to attention by a commanding officer. "The Burning Legion has set up bases there and fortified them. I have been putting together contingency plans to assault them and throw the demons back."
"Have you, Gathios?"
Illidan kept his voice deceptively mild. "And how exactly do you intend to do that? Each of those forge camps contains a transporter. They can be reinforced by demons at a moment's notice."
"Lord Illidan, we closed Magtheridan's portals with your aid. Surely we can close these."
Illidan studied the map. "Every time we close a portal, another appears. Kil'jaeden can draw upon near infinite forces. He toys with us." Lady Malanda gave a nervous giggle. This was obviously not what she had expected Illidan to say.
"You will lead us to victory, Lord. I have every faith in you.
These new soldiers you have been forging, if they are all as strong as Varedis and Netharel and Alandian, will surely be able to slaughter the demons." Illidan stared at her. She seemed particularly well informed about the demon hunters. Had she been spying on them? Of course she had. All of his council had. They were curious about anything that shifted the balance of power within the Black Temple. It might well affect their own stations. How much had Melanda uncovered? The demon hunters represented the most important part of his plan to strike back at the Burning Legion. Secrecy was critical. He could not take any chances of the Nathrezim finding out what he was up to until he was ready to launch his attack. He had told no one of his ultimate goal, but he might have let something slip, left some clue from which a mind as keen and suspicious as Melanda's would be able to deduce his intentions. Illidan wished that Lady Vash were here. She was at least straightforward, easy to understand, and utterly loyal. Alas, she was in Zangarmarsh, supervising the draining of the marshland as part of the first stage of the plan to take control of all the waters of Outland, and through them, all its people. Thirst and drought were mighty weapons. Illidan gazed at Veras Darkshadow. "Have your agents found out anything concerning Kael'thas's fate?"
Veras shook his head. "They found the last camp of his army, but then nothing."
"Nothing?"
"Nothing significant, Lord. Traces of campfires, refuse, little more."
"No sign of a struggle?"
"None, Lord. It is as if the prince simply opened a portal and vanished. It seems he does not want to be found."
Veras was implying that Kael'thas was planning some treachery. Illidan did not discount the possibility. Kil'jaeden had shown particular interest in the Blood Elf Prince the day the Black Temple had fallen. On consideration, Illidan had decided that the deceiver had been trying to sow seeds of dissension between him and his allies. Perhaps the Demon Lord had done more than that, but now was not the time to say so. If Kael'thas had turned, he might well have left spies behind. Illidan would not make them wary.
"Let us not jump to any conclusions, Veras. Just find Kael'thas."
"As you wish, Lord," said Veras.
"So shall it be."
He looked as if he wanted to speak more in private. His eyes flashed to a karma. Illidan said, "All of you are dismissed, except you, Dark Shadow. I want to have words with you concerning the whereabouts of Maiev Shadowsong." The other council members filed out. Akama paused in the doorway as if he was about to say something, thought the better of it, and departed. The elevator carried Maiev and Anindra up the side of Aldor Rise. It was a low, flat platform, and nothing visible supported it as it lifted itself into the sky. Powerful magic was at work here. Maiev's nightsaber growled and stayed away from the edge. The big cat had an excellent sense of balance, but it was taking no chances of a fall from this height. Maiev had a tremendous view of the rooftops of the city and the great tower that housed the Terrace of Light. It was so tall it threatened to touch the sky. Inside it she felt the power of the Naru. It galled her that they had not agreed to help. With their aid, she would have had a much better chance of bringing Illidan to justice. Sarius soared along beside the elevator, wearing the form of a storm crow. Maiev recognized him by his distinctive plumage. He was there to watch and observe. She did not expect these Aldor to prove treacherous, but she never ruled out the possibility with anyone. Traitors could be found in the most surprising places. Anindra said, "They say that sometimes the Broken ride this elevator just so they can throw themselves off at the top. You would think the sentries would prevent that." "Maybe they think they are performing an act of mercy," said Maiev. She was wondering whether she should have brought more guards. They would be outnumbered atop Aldor Rise, but at least their presence would have spoken of Maiev's importance. In the end, she had decided that it would be better to appear as a petitioner. The platform glided to a stop. She took one last glance down at the city and thought about those sad Broken making the long drop to the stones below. Above them, two stone islets hovered in the sky. They had been curved after the fashion of Draenei architecture, and lights glowed in their sides to leave the viewer in no doubt as to their magical provenance. It was clear that visitors were meant to be overawed by this display of magic. Great crystals studded the sides of the buildings atop the rise. At night, their glow could be seen in the sky above the city, a reminder to all of the purity of the Aldor and the light they served. Maiev sniffed at the thought. Aldor guards, clad in heavy armor and wearing the purple tabard of their faction, greeted her. They were not hostile, but they made it very clear that she was under observation. She stated her business, and they led her to the so-called Shrine of Unending Light. A tall, beautiful female Draenei, garbed in robes of blue and white, moved to greet her. Maiev inclined her head to accept her benediction. "Blessings of the light upon you, Warden Shadowsong," said the Draenei. "I am Mishana, High Priestess of the Aldor. I have been told that you would have words with me." Maiev detected a subtle note of hostility in the High Priestess's tone. "I have come seeking the aid of those who follow the light. I have been told that a number of those already follow you. I meant the Aldor. You seek to slay the one called the Betrayer, or imprison him once more." "Why?" Maiev's jaw fell open. "Because he is evil. We do not have such strength that we can afford to throw it away assaulting the Black Temple. It is all we can do to hold our ground, and we serve other functions." Maiev let her eyes dwell on Ishana's rich robes, then let them slide to their beautiful surroundings. "I can see that. We do not all have to enter the darkness to fight against it. Sometimes defeating evil means getting your hands dirty. And sometimes getting your hands dirty turns you to evil." Ishana's smile seemed mocking. "In order to work with the light, you must be pure of heart." "And you think I am not?" Maiev's anger simmered in her voice. "I think you do what you believe is right." Maiev frowned at that hair-splitting distinction. "What I do is right." "No doubt. No doubt. You will not aid me?" "At this moment I cannot." "Cannot or will not?" "There are other struggles than your own, Warden Shadowsong. Some of them are more important." "Nothing is more important than the overthrow of Illidan." "Perhaps to you. We Aldor have different priorities and limited resources. We need time to gather our strength." Frustration filled the Warden. Why was it so difficult to get the people of Outland to see the importance of her mission? She felt a tingling against her breast. It was from the stone Akama had given her. This was not the usual time they had set for their meetings. Something urgent must have come up. Perhaps it was just as well. She did not want to continue this fruitless circular argument with Ishana anyway. "I thank you for your time," Mayav said, "and ask your permission to depart." Without waiting for it, she turned and strode back to the elevator, followed by Anindra. She needed a quiet place to communicate with the Karma. She hoped that he would prove less useless than the Aldor. The streets of Shattrath's lower terrace seemed more crowded every day. More and more refugees flooded into the city, fleeing from Illidan's wars of conquest and the aftermath of his losing battles with the Legion. They seemed determined to place themselves under the protection of the Shatar. Maiv glanced over her shoulder. A blood elf hurried through the street behind her, face cowled, a scarf wound over her lower jaw. There was something in her manner that was familiar. Perhaps she was spying on Maiv. It did not matter. Sarius was out there in the crowd watching her back. Perhaps sometime she would order him to capture one of those who dogged her steps. At the moment, she had other matters to consider. She stepped into the courtyard of the Refuge of the Broken. The usual wretches looked up from their sour, watered wine, or stared at the ceiling in a numbed stupor. The air stank of the rough tobacco they smoked. It reeked of their unwashed bodies. She made her way to the chamber in which she had previously met with Akama, and she was unsurprised to find him there. Two of the Ashtung guards who had watched over him before minded the door and let her pass without comment. The Broken rose and bowed to her in greeting. At least he showed her some respect. Over the last few years they had reached an understanding of sorts. She inclined her head regally in acknowledgement. "What news?" Maiv asked. She hoped it was better than their last meeting, which had concerned only some minor victory in Illidan's war against the Legion. "Great news," Akama said. The excitement in his voice communicated itself to her. "Prince Kaelthas is missing, along with some of his army. It is likely that he has abandoned the betrayer." Maiv could not keep the smile of triumph from her face. If that is true, then Illidan has lost one of the great props to his power. She let the words hang in the air. In the past, Akama had refused to commit his people because Illidan was supported by Kaelthas and Lady Vash. Akama's smile matched her own only for a moment. "Illidan may have found a new source of power." A chill of foreboding passed through Maiv. Perhaps the betrayer had a trick to play yet. It would not be the first time. "What is it?" "I am not certain, which is why I wanted to talk to you. They are recruited entirely from your people."
"My people?"
"Elves. Desperate, ruthless elves, hardened fighters all, and all with a grudge against the Burning Legion, as far as I can tell. He takes them, and he kills them."
"What?"
"He infuses them with feral magic. Most of them die during the process, and those who live are changed, and not for the better."
"What do you mean?"
"Their bodies are saturated with evil power, and there is something in them that reeks of the demonic."
Horror twisted Maiev's face. "He is transforming elves into demons."
"Unless I miss my guess, he is remaking them in his own image. He works rituals upon them. He supervises as they receive tattoos like his. He teaches them magic, or at least so I gather from the rumors picked up by my agents. All of this takes place in sealed courtyards, far from the everyday business of the temple."
"What new monstrousness is Illidan planning?" Maiev wondered. Knowing him, it could not be anything good.
"You must find out more of this." "I am doing my best, but it is difficult and dangerous. The betrayer has taken great pains to hide his intentions for this new army. If I ask too many questions, I may be found out. If Illidan learns of our association, I am worse than dead. I must move cautiously."
"Cautiously, cautiously, it is always cautiously with you."
"That is easy for you to say. I am the one who will face the wrath of the betrayer if things go wrong."
Akama paused and took a rasping breath.
"You do not know what it is like. Every time I leave the Temple of Kerabor, I must lie. I think already Illidan suspects something. I feel as if I am being watched." It came to Maiev that in her impatience she was in danger of taking the wrong tack. Akama was clearly frightened, and not without good reason. Akama took another deep breath and spoke in a more measured tone.
It is not the first time tattooed fighters have appeared around the temple. There have been others like this before, but only seen in ones or twos, and never for long before they went on their way. This time all of them are here, and he seems bent on creating many more like them.
The first of them could have been experiments intended to test the magic used in creating these demon elves.
Such was my thought. Now there seem to be many more of them. Illidan spends lives like a drunken mercenary squanders ill-gotten silver in order to create them. For every 10 who go into the hidden courts, perhaps one comes out.
This news changed Maiev's mood. Her earlier good humor about Kael'thas's disappearance had evaporated. She knew in her heart of hearts that Illidan planned some new deviltry.
I do not like this at all, Maiev said. Akama shrugged. These new creatures are powerful. I have been called upon to heal them, and I sense strong dark magic within them. Perhaps Illidan feels they will tip the scales back in his favor. Do you think that is possible? He seems determined to create hundreds of these creatures, if not thousands. If they are all as mighty as the ones I have seen, they could change the balance of power in Outland. All I know is that the betrayer is in a frenzy to recruit as many of them as possible. I have sensed that he has a purpose in mind, and whatever it is, time is running out.
Time is certainly running out for him, Maiev said, trying to recreate her earlier mood. Without Kael'thas's support, there is a chance to unseat him.
Indeed, said Akama, I will return to the Temple of Kerebor and begin preparations. If we are to move, we must move quickly, before his new army is ready.
Satisfaction filled Maiev's mind. It was the first time the Broken had expressed a definite commitment to action. It seemed that he, just as much as the betrayer, felt time was getting short. Akama passed through the portal and stepped into the Temple of Kerebor. Despite all the corruption about him, it still felt like coming home. He rubbed his hands together, took a deep breath, and tried to push his worries away. Confronting Maiev was always nerve-wracking. She was so full of rage and hate, and she was so determined to take Illidan to task for all his wrongdoing. She really did not seem to realize that she had turned herself into the betrayer's mirror image. The Broken hurried through the corridors toward his chambers. One of the abominable eyeless soldiers glanced at him as he passed. It was eerie how those blind-seeming heads turned to track him as he went by. All around, the temple buzzed with activity. Soldiers marched, magi wove spells. The defenses were being strengthened night and day. He reached the sanctuary of his people. His bodyguard gave him a warning sign, and as he passed the entrance, he understood why. Illidan waited within the chamber. In his hand he had a precious crystal statue that Akama had preserved from the destruction of the temple. He held it up to the light, turning it this way and that. He did not look around as the Broken entered. He just said, "Ah, Akama, you have been hard to find today." There had been a time when this simple trick would have disconcerted Akama, but he was used to it now.
"I went traveling to Orobor Harborage. I had much to think about, and it helps clear my head."
"You have been doing that a lot over the past few years." Akama's stomach lurched. Did the betrayer suspect what was going on? Had he seen through the deceptions? Illidan walked over and placed an arm around Akama's shoulder. The tips of his talons dug gently into the cloth of the Broken's tunic. "Walk with me to the refectory. It has been some time since we talked. I would learn more of these jaunts of yours." With irresistible strength, he guided Akama through the exit that led into the temple's sanctuary of shadows. Demons moved into position all around him. Akama glanced at the great chains hanging from the darkened pillars that rose so high above. They seemed like a dark omen. Soon, screams rang out, as if from someone whose soul was being ripped from his body. Chapter 13. 3 months before the fall. Vandel leapt through the blazing ring, hit the ground rolling, ducked under the swinging blade. It passed him by a hair's breadth. He rose, sprang forward over the flame pit. He was first again. He had passed through all the obstacles without taking a scratch. Syana was just behind him, not even breathing hard. She smiled at him, but he sensed that she was piqued that he had beaten her again. She was very competitive. Raphael was next, lithe and swift. The others filtered in one after another. In the weeks after the ritual, there had been many losses. Mavalith and Celadon and Isteth had hurled themselves from the battlements, unable to bear what they had become. Mavalith and Celadon had grown progressively more monstrous-looking as the days dragged into weeks, but Isteth still had the beauty that Vandel had noticed during the first days. It was her mind that had been twisted. He hoped she was at peace now, joined at last with her dead children. Any hope that the ritual had winnowed out those who could not face the consequences of their choices was gone. Over half of those transformed had died in the process. Their hearts had stopped, or their minds had cracked, and they had needed to be put down. More had gone mad in the aftermath, unable to bear the visions they witnessed, or to live with the things resident inside them. Vandel had no doubt that their demons had pushed them over the edge. The thing within him made its presence felt every day, and he was by no means certain that he would win this struggle in the long run. There were days when depression and self-loathing made his life unbearable. There were times when he was so filled with rage that he could barely restrain himself from running through the temple and slashing elves with his blades until the guards dragged him down. Selenus had gone out that way, and Balambor and Turanis. They had taken a lot of others with them. All of the survivors of the ritual understood what they had felt. Vandel had come within a hair's breadth of doing it himself. He sometimes wondered if the difference between him and the berserkers was just that he had not quite reached the brink yet. He clutched the amulet he had made for Karael tight in his hand, a talisman of protection against the possibility, a reminder to himself of why he fought with his demon every day. Vengeance, son. One day you will have vengeance. Something at the back of his mind mocked him, but for today at least he could ignore it. Things had gotten worse since the supernatural part of the training started. Their instructors, Varedis, Alandian, and Netherel, taught them how to tap the fell powers of the demons within them, how to channel the darkest energies in creation. In a way, it was thrilling. Vandel knew now how to augment his strength and speed manyfold. He could drive the blade of his dagger into a boulder and rip it free. He had cast bolts of fell energy capable of burning through the strongest of armor. He could heal himself by draining the souls of his fallen victims. He had battled, summoned demons, learning how to kill them. At first the aspirants had fought in groups, but as the weeks passed, they had been trained how to win in single combat. Scores had died during that period, and one night a fell guard had broken free and rampaged through the corridors of the ruins of Kerebor until Varedis had brought him down. Vandel fingered the long scar down his right side that the demon had given him. The fell guard's axe had ripped through the inking of his tattoos, distorting them and making it hard to draw on fell energies when he tried to cast certain spells. He had learned an enormous amount in a very brief time. But it seemed no matter how much he grasped, his instructors always wanted him to try harder, master more. They were as driven as Illidan, and he could not help but feel there was some great purpose behind this, that the day was coming when all he had learned would be put to use in the betrayer's service. There was an urgency about this process, and a desperation. Every day the great ritual was performed. Every day more and more candidates were fed into the hungry maw of the training process. A few of them survived to be threshed through a system that often seemed intended as much to kill the weak as to teach the strong. Kill the weak, kill the weak, kill the weak, the demonic voice whispered. Images of Karael's half-devoured body flickered mockingly through his mind. Kill them all. All are weak. His dreams were things of horror. One night he woke to find himself standing, clutching his blade. He wondered then if the thing within him gained a measure of control during his nightmares. Tibelius had sneaked through the cells, slitting throats, until Needle ended his nocturnal adventuring forever by putting a skewer through each empty eye socket. There were times when Vandel felt as if he were locked in a cage with murderous beasts, and he was not the least murderous of them. He looked around again. Illidan had been right. He could see things now as well as ever he had seen when he possessed eyes of flesh. Better. Darkness obscured nothing. Something in his mind adjusted his perceptions. He suspected the demon aided him. It wanted him to master these powers, as if the more he mastered, the more vulnerable he became to the temptations the demon put before him. No matter. He wanted the strength. He was glad he could see. He was glad he could hear better than any elf had a right to. He was glad he was strong as an ogre and swifter than a nightsaber. His appearance reflected the changes. He could extend claws from his fingertips and did so in moments of danger. Massive scars marked where he had gouged himself with his dagger. The mirror showed him that a fell green glow had replaced his eyes. It intensified when he used the power. A hand descended on his shoulder. "Exhausted, are you, old one?" Syana asked. Vandel shook his head. "I am just getting started." "I hope so," said Ravail. "This sparring session, I am going to beat you. Do not give in too easily. When you struggle, it only makes my victory all the sweeter." "Victory is sweet," said the voice in his head. Every day it sounded more like his own. "Flesh is sweeter still." They entered the courtyard. The high crumbling walls of Kerebor's ruins loomed over the aspirants, massive and imprisoning. Tattooed elves crowded the open spaces between the training rings, waiting for their chance to fight. Greenish-yellow glowing runes, chiseled into the flagstones, formed the circumference of the mystic circles. The runes' shapes suggested similarities to the tattoos inked on the aspirant's skin. Each ring contained two combatants fighting under the supervision of one of the trainers. Spell-wrought auras surrounded their weapons and blunted the force of their blows, turning them from fatal into something merely bruising and painful. Vandel watched a pair of fighters circle and strike until one knocked the other down. "I claim victory," the winner shouted, while the loser lolled on the ground in defeat. Viridis nodded and raised his hand, and the combat was over. The circle emptied. The trainer gestured for Ravail and Vandel to begin. Ravail stepped into the circle, a scythe in each hand. Protective auras shimmered around their blades. Viridis put the spell on Vandel's runic dagger and the other blade he had taken from the temple armory. Vandel stepped into the circle. Ravail made an obscene gesture with his right-hand weapon. "Today you will learn the meaning of defeat." He sprang blazingly fast, uncannily precise in his movements. The ritual had granted Ravail even more strength and speed than it had given Vandel. It had gifted him with huge claws and twisted circular horns. Now, in the arena, as he drew upon his demonic powers, those attributes seemed even more pronounced. The scythe impacted on Vandel's biceps with numbing force. "If this were a real fight, you would have lost your arm," Ravail taunted. Anger surged deep within Vandel. That had not been fair. He dismissed the thought. In combat, no demon would give him a fair chance. "In a real fight, I would come and tear your heart out." He meant the words to sound mocking, but they came out utterly serious, and he knew, even as they left his lips, that he meant them. Ravail unleashed a flurry of blows, but this time Vandel was ready. Dagger clattered against scythe. The sound of metal on metal rang around the courtyard. Every blow Ravail launched, Vandel parried. At the end of the storm of attacks, he reached out and struck Ravail just above the heart with his dagger. If he had been a fraction quicker, he would have struck the equivalent of a killing blow, but as it was, he would merely have wounded his foe. "A scratch," said Ravail. A spark of berserk rage ignited within Vandel's chest. He would not be mocked.
not by one as weak and pitiful as this. Something in Raphael sensed his mood and responded. The air between them crackled with tension. Vandel threw himself forward, aiming at Raphael's head. Raphael raised both scythes, caught his blade, and twisted, but as he did so, Vandel's second blade connected with his stomach. "And now you would be dead," Vandel said, and something within him wished his foe was. "I win again." He was about to turn away when he heard Raphael growling. A low, bestial sound emerged from deep within the other elf's chest. Spittle dripped from the corner of his mouth. His eye sockets were pools of blood in which witch fires danced. Balls of ruddy light flickered around the tips of his horns. "I am not defeated," said Raphael. His voice was thick and guttural and full of hate. Power clotted in the air around him. A sheen of shadow passed across his body, turning his skin first grey and then blacker than night. Great wings of shadow lifted from Raphael's back. Vandel felt the air displaced by their movement. He could smell brimstone and the aura of demon, stronger in his nostrils than at any time, save when he had fought with real denizens of the nether realms. Raphael sprang forward, bringing his blades down. Both blows impacted painfully on Vandel's arms. This time there was no doubt he would be either crippled or dead if the fight had been a real one. It was not enough for his opponent. Raphael rained down blow after agonizing blow. Vandel brought his own blades up and managed to parry the first scythe. The second one caught him above the temple. Pain lanced his brow. The metallic tang of blood filled his nostrils. Shadow had engulfed the scythes in Raphael's hands, drowning out the protective spells. His power overcame the wards upon the blades. The scythes were deadly now, and Raphael was intent upon using them. No one made any move to intervene. Spectators licked their lips. Varedis made a careless gesture indicating that the fight should continue. He looked more interested than worried by this latest development. The scythes flicked out. More blood flowed. Raphael smiled. White fangs became visible within his shadowy outline. "This time, I will win." No one was going to intervene as long as Raphael did not leave the circle. Vandel could step outside it himself and put an end to things by admitting defeat. He was tempted to do so, but something in him responded to the smell of his own blood and the feeling of pain. Rage reddened his vision, and with it came power. He raised his hands and wove a thunderbolt of fell energy. It surged out from his pointing finger and smashed into Raphael. The ravenous green energy tore at the shadowy integument, shredding it to blackened tatters. He fed more strength into the spell. Raphael screamed as his flesh roasted. Vandel knew that he should stop, but part of him did not want to, and it was not just the demonic part. He wanted Raphael to experience the same pain that he had. He poured more and more of his strength into the bolt. His heart sounded loud as a drumbeat. Breath emerged in ragged gasps. He changed the focus of the spell once he knew Raphael was dead, drawing shadowy globules of the defeated elf's corrupted soul into his own, channeling the stolen power and using it to heal his wounds. Vandel knew he should feel guilty, but he did not. He felt exultation. His only regret was that he had to restrain himself from feasting. The smell of burned demon flesh was still in the air, and it made his mouth water. He looked around at the faces clustered at the edge of the circle. He was tempted to unleash his power on them, to strike and slay and kill, to slake the thirst for destruction that this combat had aroused. But that would be fatal, and he was not quite ready to die yet. He fought the urge down. The thunder of his heartbeat became softer in his ears. His breathing became more regular. He waited to see what his instructor would do. Varedis just shook his head as if he had seen things like this before, and they did not trouble him. "He tried to kill you," said the voice in his head, "and if you had not drawn on my power, he would have succeeded. You owe me your life." It was true, Vandel realized. He had slain one of the other recruits, and no one appeared to be doing anything about it. He stepped outside the circle.
I claim victory, he said. You are victorious, Viridis replied.
Chapter 14. 3 months before the fall. Illidan took 9 paces across the floor of his chamber, turned, and took 9 paces back. He felt calmer now. His thoughts returned to Akama. That the Broken had conspired with Maiev Shadowsong had almost cost the Ashtang leader his life. Maiev, of all elves, Illidan would have rewarded his treachery with death, but he still needed Akama and his people, so he had devised another and better punishment. That thought gave him considerable satisfaction. He had ensured the Broken would never betray him again. Not only that, but he had found a way to get Akama to deliver Maiev into his hands, and he had fit it all into his scheme to strike back against the Burning Legion. Now, he had only one more problem to solve, and he was close to doing that. Illidan looked down at the massive oaken desk. On it lay a number of maps and charts held down by the skull of Gul'dan. The patterns inscribed on them in demon blood were written in a notation that he had created himself and that only he understood completely. The geometric runes mapped the flows of energy between the portals of Outland and their terminus points in parts of the twisting nether. He rubbed his brow and concentrated. He was on the edge of a breakthrough. It was so close he could almost taste it. He had spent years accumulating this information, plundering it from libraries and wizards' collections all over Outland. He had visited every location marked on the map and used geomantic sorcery to chart the outflows of power into the twisting nether. He had interrogated thousands of demons, listened for clues in the speech of Magtheridan and a dozen of the Nathrezim, the so-called Dreadlords. He had used spells to follow the trace energies of 1,000 summonings. He had tortured and devoured imps and overmastered succubi. He had spent years putting together clues, and finally he was ready. He had been goaded by the half-recalled memories he had acquired from Gul'dan when he had absorbed the power of the orc warlock's skull. Gul'dan's visions had hinted at a way to achieve his wildest dreams. He had seen things that no other mortal had, and the recollections haunted Illidan. Excitement grew within him. Finally, at long last, he saw the pattern. The old warlock had been right. There were complex weaves of power, a mesh that fed upon itself and drew energy from the land and air around it. It held the portals open against the natural inclination of reality to force them shut. It opened pathways among dozens of worlds. Some of the arcs were incomplete. He knew they must go somewhere. Given what he knew about the forces involved, he could work out their eventual termination points with complex astronomical calculations. He could finally create the divination spell that could search through those portals and find what he was looking for. He needed to act soon, before word leaked and one of the Nathrezim worked out what he was doing. The Dreadlords were too damnably clever, and if they acted to forestall him, all his years of sacrifice, all the decades of planning, would be in vain. Wearily, but filled with growing excitement, he inscribed the syllables of the great spell. When it was done, he laid down his pen atop the sheet of parchment with a sense of profound satisfaction. He was as ready as he was ever going to be. It was time to act. Illidan walked deeper into the great circular chamber. On the floor, inscribed in the blood of demons and elves and Draenei, pulsed a duplicate of the patterns on his charts, written 100 times larger. Glowing runes clustered around the edges, shaping the cataracts of fell energy flowing into the chamber. He walked around the edge, muttering spells of warding and shielding. He wanted no prying eyes witnessing what he did here, no possible intrusions to disturb his concentration. He spoke a word of power, and all the doors closed. The seals were so tight that eventually the air would turn poisonous with the effusions of his own breath. If he remained lost in the ritual too long, this place would become his tomb. He walked through a gap in the huge pattern and followed it to the middle of the chamber, careful not to step on any of the lines. The slightest break would be fatal. At the exact centre of the chamber he spread his wings, let them beat once, and hovered in the air. He pulled his legs up underneath him into the lotus position and invoked magic that let him remain hovering above the ground. He spoke another word of power, and the braziers set at each point of the compass burst into flames, igniting the aromatic essences they contained. Clouds of hallucinogenic smoke flowed through the air. Tendrils of burning incense slithered through the pattern until they reached his nostrils. He took three deep breaths, and each of them drove the vapor deeper into his lungs. He closed his mouth and held it in until he felt as if he had absorbed every last fraction of the power it contained. Long practice in alchemy let him identify the individual components. Doomguard bone, ground with a mortar and pestle, carved from the skeleton of a dragon. Powdered fellhound blood, distilled essence of fellweed, 1,000 different items, all chosen to activate key sections of his sorcerer's mind and free his soul. Ancient hungers tugged, tempting him to bathe in those evil energies. His skin tingled, the hair on his scalp rose, his tongue felt thick. Power flowed into him, so much power. He felt like a god, as if he had only to will something to happen in order to make it so. He held the energy for a moment, just letting it stay within him, enjoying the sensation of being on the brink. Of his last moment of calm, after this, everything would change. Slowly, delicately, as if he were taking a scalpel to a butterfly's wing, he invoked the last stages of the spell. A sensation of lightness struck him as his spirit dissociated from his body. He looked down upon his empty shell hovering in the air below him. He felt a moment of vertigo, a sharp stab of fear. At this moment, his spirit was vulnerable. If anything happened to him here, he would die. A silver thread, so thin as to be almost invisible, connected him to the husk beneath him. If that was separated, his spirit would wander forever, unable to return to his body. He felt the absence of so many things. No heartbeat, no blood flowing in his veins, no air rasping into his lungs, no tug of gravity on flesh and bone and muscle. Ever since Sargeras had taken his eyes, back when Illidan had first joined the Legion, he had been able to see into the twisting nether. It had taken him centuries to realize what he could do with this power. For decades, dreadful dreams had blasted his sanity and driven him screaming from sleep. It had been one of the worst torments of his long imprisonment. He doubted anyone else could have endured what he had in order to harness this power to their will. Anyone who had not mastered sorcery as he had would have been incapable of the feat. It had been necessary, though. It had given him the ability to send his soul out into the twisting nether and the great dark beyond to see other worlds, other universes. It had given him terrifying insight into the plans and goals of the Burning Legion. Now he needed to stretch himself farther than he had ever done before, reach deeper into the infinite abyss in search of his ultimate goal. The fell power channeled by the great pattern roared around him. He studied it, knowing it to be both a map and a key that would open the way to where he had to go. He molded the flows of magic slowly, lacking the physical cues he normally took for granted. Air did not caress his limbs, words did not cause his diaphragm to vibrate. The power moved sluggishly in response to his will. He shaped it, channeling it through the pattern, aiming it toward the chink in the wards he had created. Like water flowing down a ravine, the spell surged through the tiny opening, creating a gap in the fabric of reality that opened out into somewhere else. Illidan focused his attention on that space. If something waited on the other side, it would attack as soon as the chink was wide enough to pass through. At this moment he was very vulnerable. His strength was not what it was when anchored by his corporeal form. He waited, hoping against hope that there was nothing there. He could ill afford the distraction, or the time, or the energy it would take to defend himself. Nothing happened. He allowed his spirit to go with the flow of energy and pass through the opening between worlds and out into the twisting nether. It exploded into being around him. There were 1,000 ways to perceive this place. Every voyager saw it differently, depending on circumstance and form and state of mind. For him, it was a black, airless void in which 1 billion stars twinkled. Behind and beneath him blazed